Good afternoon to everybody. Hope everybody's enjoying this nice treat of the snow. Just like to wake up this morning and see about a foot of snow on the ground, but I'm sure that's only affecting the Northeast. I hope everybody's doing well. We're just going to do a brief audio check before we start the class. Once you hear the audio, just type in audio okay at the bottom of your screen, and we'll start in just a few minutes. And again, as always, if you've missed any part of the class, we do post these classes online about a half an hour after the class is over, so you can listen to the entire class by going to the audio files link. Again, once you hear the audio, just type in on the bottom of your screen audio okay. That'll let it confirm for us that you're picking up the audio fine. Gene, good to see you. All right, Nanine in Seattle, Ellie in Baltimore, Trudy, thank you. And again, we'll just start like another, it's actually just 3:30 on the nose right now, so we'll just give a few more minutes for everybody else to log on. And we're going to take up today what's been, I don't know if a lot of you have, if you get our Jewish times, but we've been having a little bit of a debate back and forth with a couple of readers regarding proving Sinai, proving Judaism to the exclusion of other religions, and how do we do that? What is the rational basis by which we say that Judaism is the one religion that God gave to the exclusion of all others? Everything in Judaism has to be based on principle, on reason, rationality, proof. We don't accept this blind faith method of living. We have intelligence for a reason. So we have to apply it in the most important of all areas. So I felt this would be a good forum in order to just bring out the a number of arguments that have been emailed to us. We responded to them in the Jewish Times, but to do it verbally, and this way you can interact with us and mention your questions as well, is much more of an efficient way. This way there's immediate feedback for both of us. And again, this is the basis, the foundation of why we follow Judaism. So it's very important we have proof for this. So that's what we'll take up. Okay, we'll start in about 1 minute. Once you hear the audio, if you didn't already type it into your screen, if you're picking up the audio fine, please type audio okay at the bottom. And I'll just confirm that everybody's picking up the audio all right. And again, we'll start in about 1 minute. Okay, Jack in Melbourne, or Jacques, early there for you. We'll try and see what we can do for you in terms of your request earlier to have the time clocks for Australia too. That should be no problem. So maybe in a day or so we'll have that time clock up as well. All right, Benny in Arkansas, thank you. RL in New York, Jack, thank you. Okay, Tom, good to see you again. I recall that name. My pleasure, Jacques. All right, Lila, Chicago, thank you. Gabriel in LA, thank you. Mordechai, Pennsylvania, thanks. All right, good to see you, Eleazar. All right, Jill in Baltimore, how are you picking up the audio? And Arot in Israel. Arot, if you're getting the audio okay, just type in the words audio okay. Okay, and if you want to have any text in front of you, we're going to be referring to chapter 4 in Deuteronomy. That's Perek Dalad in Parshas Devarim. That's Bo'ez Chanan. Okay, Dave in Seattle. Well, hopefully Beryl in England will read the red text and he'll be able to just check all of his connections. But it looks like we have sound for everybody else. All right, good to see you, Carla, Virginia, Faith in Montana. Please type audio okay. We're just about to start the class. And Beryl in England, if you could hear, once you do, type audio okay. And actually, we're just about to start now. So let's just do one more round of an audio check. This would apply to everybody. So regardless of if you typed anything earlier, everybody at this point, just type in audio okay number 2. And then we're going to start the class. And again, if you do miss any part of it, if you have any connection problems, we do record the classes, so the class will be posted in its entirety underneath the audio files link about a half an hour after the class is over. All right, looks like we're ready to go. Okay, so like I said, we had an up and back over the past week or so, actually the past 3 weeks, regarding the whole proof of Judaism, which is based on Sinai, based on the event that took place in front of masses. And as the event goes, and you can refer to it in Deuteronomy 4, so God had instructed the people. He instructed Moses to assemble the whole people. The people were counted a couple of times as they left Egypt, and there were 600,000 men above 20. Now, if you include the men below 20 and also all the women, you get approximately 2 million or 2.5 million people that exited Egypt and reached Sinai, and that's where the Torah was given. All the people witnessed the miracles, the cloud, and the voice coming out of the fiery mountain. And we explained a number of times that the reason why God constructed this miracle as a voice, of intelligent voice, emanating from fire and on a mountain, was because in order to prove that there is something which is responsible for the existence of the world, so it must be proven that this being, this intelligence, is not of the nature of this world. And the only way you can prove something that has intelligence is not physical, is by combining the event with fire, by having a mountain completely engulfed in flames, and then hearing a voice emanate from the flames, you come to the conclusion that this intelligence cannot be physical. It can't be biological, because fire is the one element that would destroy any type of biological creature. Anything else could exist, meaning an intelligent creature can exist either in water, earth, air, fog, any other element, you can sustain life. But fire is the one thing which eliminates any type of life. So that's the reason why God created the event as a fiery mountain, and then intelligent words coming out of the fire. And it was done on the mountain for a separate reason, that it should be visible to all the people in the distance, because when you have so many people, you need to have a raised platform in order that the people in the back, the people in the distance, can witness the event. Okay, so that's why the event was formulated in that fashion. And if you look at the actual words, let me just quote, and I'll read to you. And again, we'll go through the arguments that the people had. But the actual story, Moses repeats over to them, and he tells them as follows. He says, it's very important, by the way, that as the story, there's Moshe is recounting this. Moses is recounting this in Deuteronomy 4. And the first verse, actually, we could start with is 6. So 4:6 in Deuteronomy. And you read through about 10 psukim or so. And he says to them, and you should watch them and do them. Moses is referring to all the commands. That it is now at the end of Moses' life. So he's referring to all the commands, and he's telling the Jews, you should watch them and do them, because it is your wisdom and your understanding in the eyes of the other nations, that they will hear these statutes, and they will say, what a wise and understanding is this great nation. Meaning when the other nations hear about the laws of the Torah, so then they're going to have a response that this is just an amazing people, that they're just so wise and understanding. Meaning all the other nations will recognize the Torah system as being supreme. So you see right from this verse, that's 4:6 in Deuteronomy, that God is mentioning, and Moses actually is the one who's speaking, he's saying that it'll be undeniable, the greatness and the supremacy of the Torah system, and the other nations will admit to it. But the one problem is that if a Jew doesn't act properly and doesn't exhibit the laws by regular daily practice, as we're mixed amongst other nations, so the other nations will not have anything to look at. So we're going to be forfeiting from the other nations a chance for them to see the true ideas as well. And as also we said, the concept that the Torah is not just for the Jew, but it's for everybody, albeit that the Jew has more commands and the rest of the world only has 7 as a minimum. But the rest of the world can keep more than 7 commands if they want, but that's the minimum necessary for them to be entitled to life. Because if they can't even keep a basic 7 commands that deal with justice and not stealing and not killing and marital laws and setting up courts, if they can't have the basic fabric of society, then they don't deserve life. We wouldn't either, but we have much more obligatory laws than them. So, and number one, it's important that we actually do not shy away from exhibiting the law, the ideas of Judaism to the nations, because that's how it will be fulfilled, what Moshe says to the people. Moshe tells the people that when they see you functioning properly, their response is going to be, "Kihi chach masem," it'll be your wisdom and your understanding in the eyes of the other nations. They're going to hear the statutes, right? And they will say, Rak am chacham v'navon, hagoy hagadol hazeh. These people are only a wise and understanding people to this great and mighty nation. So you see that this will be the response of other nations if they see the ideas of the Torah clearly. Okay. And Moses goes on and he says, for what great nation has God close to them? Like God, our God, with any time that we call upon him. Meaning to say that God responds to the Jewish nation. And what great nation has statutes and laws that are righteous, like this entire Torah? that I placed before you today. Okay, now we're up to 4:9, Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 9. So Moses goes on. And let me just take a look on the screen. It looks like somebody's having a sound problem. Maybe we could just do one more sound confirmation on screen. Again, this is just apply this to everybody because I'm not sure if there's any difficulty because of the weather. So if everybody now can just type on screen, audio okay, number 3, that will just confirm that the sound is still working all right. We changed nothing from our end, so it could just be that Dennis in, looks like Wisconsin, is having a problem. But I guess before we go further, it's a good idea just to confirm that the sound is working all right for everybody. So if everybody could just type that in. I'll just wait a moment before we go further. All right, looks like the sound is fine. All right, so now we're up to... All right, thanks everybody for just a quick confirmation. Okay, so Moses goes on further, and he says, but he says like this, Rock, however, guard yourselves and guard your souls. Right? He says, guard yourself and guard your souls greatly, lest you forget the matters which your own eyes saw, and lest you forget from your heart all the days of your life. And you should tell these over to your children and your grandchildren. What is it that Moses is referring to? So he goes on, and he says, the day that you stood at Sinai. So when he says over here that you should guard yourself and guard your soul greatly, and you shouldn't forget what your eyes saw. Now keep in mind, we have this story today in our hands. That means people repeated this and passed it on. And this is one of the main points about the event, that why would people pass on a story that they are saying, yes, my eyes saw it, and now I'm going to pass it on to my children, my grandchildren, and this has gone through the ages about 3,300 years now. Over 3,300 years, this story has been transmitted without break, without a breach. And that's an important thing, that there was no break in the transmission of the story at Sinai. So Moses says to the people, be very careful, right? This is Deuteronomy 4:9. And guard yourself and guard your souls tremendously, lest you forget the matters which your own eyes saw. Now, if Moses is coming up to a group of people that didn't see any event at Sinai, and he says to them, all right, listen, you should be careful. He says these exact words. And he says, be careful that you shouldn't forget what your own eyes saw. Now, if Moses... if this story did not take place in Sinai, and Moses just finds a group of people, and he tells this to them, and they're going to look at Moses like saying, what do you mean, what our eyes saw? We didn't see anything. So if the story is a fabrication, there would be no way that Moses would be successful in getting other people to believe it, and then let alone pass it on. And then to include in the story that there were millions of people there, and that we left Egypt, I mean, if this did not take place, if the events did not take place, if the Jews were not slaves in Egypt and all the plagues did not take place, you would not have the story passed down in such a unanimous fashion, in such an identical fashion, and even amongst other religions, they adopt the five books of Moses. Okay, Mordechai in Pennsylvania is asking the approximate date of the events at Sinai. I'll tell you the exact date. It was 3,313 years ago. The year was 2448. We are presently in 5765. Okay? So now, Moses is, if the event did not take place, he would be dealing with an impossible task of trying to get a nation to believe that they saw something that they didn't. They would think he's a lunatic, just like anybody today would try to convince us that somebody else is the president and not George Bush. If somebody tried to convince us of that, the guy, we'd lock him up and say he's a lunatic. There would be no success at all to his story. But Moses goes on and he says, don't forget what your eyes saw. And Moses committed this to being part of the Torah, because Moses understood that when you have this statement attested to by so many people, that itself is the proof that the story had to be true. It would be impossible Now, I'm not really looking on the screen right now for questions. We'll have a question and answer period afterwards. But I can't look at the screen and also refer to the text. So I see that Gavriel in LA, you just wrote something. Just maybe copy and hold on to that. And when I ask you for the questions after we pause at a certain point, then we'll take all the questions. Okay, Gavriel, I appreciate that. Okay, so Moses goes on, and he says that you shouldn't forget the day which you stood before God in Horeb. All right, so Horeb, that's it refers to Sinai. And Moses keeps on going. He says, "Be'emar Hashem Eli, when God said to me, 'Assemble for me the people, and I will make my words known, that you should teach them, and they should fear me all the days that they are alive, and to the children they will also teach.'" And he goes on, and he says, "And you all drew close, and you stood at the bottom of the mountain, and the mountain was burning with fire to the heart of the heavens. There was darkness and thick darkness. And God said to you from the midst of the fire." And he spoke words, kol devarim, the sound of words you heard, but a form you did not see, only a voice. Moses makes it very clear over here that the Jews saw nothing. The only thing they perceived was a mountain on fire and in hearing a voice of intelligence coming out of the fire. And he goes on and he continues and he says, "And God told to you his covenant, which he commanded to you, to do these 10 matters, the 10 commandments he's referring to. And he wrote them on 2 tablets of stone. And he commanded me at that time to teach you the statutes and the laws, that you should do them in the land which you were passing over to inherit." And Moses repeats it. We're now in 4:15. "And guard yourselves greatly to your souls." Meaning he's saying this is a matter of your life. It's a matter of your life that you should have the correct ideas, which is true. A person lives once, and it's essential that you have a clear understanding of what took place and that this is going to make or break your whole purpose in existence. That's why Moses repeats again in 4:15. And he says, "V'nishmartem od," you should guard yourselves greatly for the sake of your souls, that you did not see any physical form on the day that God spoke to you in Horeb from amidst the flames. So he reminds them of what they saw. Now, this forms the whole event. These couple of verses form the whole event of Sinai. And the question is, of course, now how does this act as a proof? So a person would say, well, you listen, you know, people back then, they were there, they saw it, it's proof for them, but I wasn't there, my eyes didn't see it. So how do I know? Well, the answer is that it would be impossible for us to have the story today unless people passed it down. That everybody would agree to. Now, the story that we have in our hands is only one of two possibilities. It's either true or it's false. Now, if we could prove that the story is not false, then there's only one other possibility. It has to be true. And this would apply to any event in history. If you could show how any event in history, it's impossible that it would be false, so then it must have been a true event. All right? It does not matter whether it's a religious-oriented event or if it's political or just an event from some tribe somewhere. And as the rabbis taught over the years, the way we can remove the possibility of something being false is one of two ways. You either show that there's, because something could be false. A story can be false in one of two fashions. It's false in terms of the, because again, a story, keep in mind, a story is content that is communicated. If you have to define what exactly is a story, what exactly is history that we have in our hands? History, any story, is content that is transmitted. Now, this transmission can either be true or false. Now, if I would ask you, how do you make a transmission false? How can a history be false? Well, there's one of two ways. Either whoever transmitted it was malicious, they purposely fabricated the story, or they weren't malicious, but they were ignorant, meaning it was an accidental alteration. All right, so there's one of two ways that something can be communicated wrongly. Either it's communicated wrongly because it is communicated on purpose in a false manner, that's called fabrication. Somebody lies to you about the story. Or it's not lying, but the person who's communicating the story is ignorant. They just don't have the capability. Like if you'd be driving in a taxi in the city, and you would ask the taxi driver, what exactly was Einstein's theory of relativity, you would not assume that this person who's driving all day and is not studying can really apprehend and communicate something of that nature. But if you would ask the taxi driver, well, what's the weather like today? He can tell you. He's very, very capable. So in terms of communication that's false, it could be false because somebody fabricates it or because they just don't have the capability to communicate because of their intelligence. Now, we can get rid of both of these problems. Okay, we can get rid of the problem of ignorance if we basically look at the content of the story and we see the story is a very simple phenomenon. Right? For example, Sinai was, there was a mountain. Everybody knows what a mountain is. Everybody knows what fire is. And everybody knows what a voice is. So the elements in the story by Sinai do not lend themselves to being subject to ignorance. It's not something which anybody would confuse it with something else. Just like for another example, Kennedy being shot. Nobody ever said Kennedy was killed by a bomb. It was, everybody agrees that he was shot. So this is a, you know, that's an important parallel in terms of showing you how there are certain areas, certain content in the story which you know nobody would make a mistake about. So any story, any history that we have in our hands that is simple phenomena, we can be assured that there was no room for ignorance. All right, so Sinai is not subject to ignorance, but maybe somebody made up the story. That would be the other possibility about whether Sinai is true or not. Well, how do we remove fabrication? How do we remove the possibility that this story was made up and it was a conspiracy, and that's what we have in our hands today? That's what the entire world believes. The Christian world, the Jewish world, even the Muslim world bases itself a lot on stories about Abraham and Ishmael and Hagar. I mean, their whole religious practice where they go to Mecca and they have what they call Hajj. So they enact certain actions from the Torah itself. About Hagar, when she was looking for water, she was running back and forth, and according to them. I mean, that's not the case. But they took it and they humanized the story more in terms of projecting more like a frantic personality onto Hagar. So they have a certain religious rite where the people who go to the Mecca, and they go to this one little building that's in the middle, and there's millions of people that make this pilgrimage, and when they get there, they reenact what they think Hagar was doing. But that just shows you that even they, these billions of people, are attesting to the story that we have in the Torah about Abraham and Hagar, I mean, to an extent. But what this shows you is that you have billions of people that attest to the history that's written down in the Torah. Now, is it possible? We've already shown how the story of Sinai, I mean, the Torah itself, it's not susceptible to being subject to ignorance because the facts are very simple about Sinai. But what about fabrication? Maybe all the people got together and they conspired. Now, the point is that if you have so many people at an event, is it possible to have fabrication? And the answer is no. It is impossible. The concept of a human, of a mass conspiracy, and I see some people have questions, but again, as we said earlier, since you're coming in late, you didn't see where we wrote, I actually mentioned earlier that there will be a question and answer period. That'll be after a certain part of the class. So there will be question and answer period, but not at this point. We just want to get the facts out in order that we have something to do and discuss. Okay. So in terms of fabrication, is it possible that the story we have is fabricated? We say no. It is impossible because fabrication means that a person has a motive to lie. A person, a human being, does not lie without a motive. And you will not be able to get millions of people. I mean, you couldn't even go to a baseball stadium that has, let's say, 30,000 people on a given day and get them all to say that the Yankees won when really it was the Mets that won. It would be impossible to get so many people to agree because they do not share a common motive to lie. Lying can only be done in small numbers or individuals. And then, if a person lies, then the people listening have the choice of whether believing or not. So that's something which is in terms of belief, but we're talking about absolute proof. So in terms of having a lie conspired by millions of people, that you will not have. It's against human nature. Now, once we posit this, and we see that human nature are in such masses, and that's what you had at Sinai, you had 2 million people there. Again, the Torah records the numbers. 600,000 men above 20, then you have the men below 20, and then you have, so let's say there were a few hundred thousand below 20. So you got roughly 1 million. And then you have all the women. That's another million. So you have about 2 million people at Sinai. And you see that the numbers were counted later on in the Book of Prophets, where there were 3 million Jews that were counted in the time of David. Even though counting was not a right thing to do, but they did take a census, and they went through the entire land, and they found there 800,000 men in one section and 500,000 men in another, and then you had all the women, and then you had all the children, because those men were counted above 20 again. So later on, about 400 years later, you see the number of Jews was now 3 million. And you have that number counted. And again, that would not be passed on unless that was something that the people agreed to. So now we've effectively shown how it is impossible that the story could have been either made up, because you couldn't have masses of people conspire about an event. And this is, again, there's no break in the transmission. And we'll get to stories about Jesus as well, too. So now, that's one thing in terms of the fabrication. But there's also no ignorance. You can't say, well, maybe the people all made a mistake about the story. Well, that itself, on the surface, you see, doesn't make sense, that everybody makes the same exact mistake. No. Plus, when the story itself, the content, is clear, so then there's no room to suggest that there's any ignorance. Okay. Now, so that's basically what the content is. Now what we're going to do is get to the actual critique that we had. That was the real point of the class today, is to discuss and again, I see people writing on screen, but you know, I'm not going to be able to look at it and take your questions. So whatever you're writing is not going to be, it's not going to register. Wait till the question and answers are prompted, and then you can type. Okay. So now let's take up the critique that we've been going back and forth on. So there were a couple of people that were writing in. Now, one critique, and if you want, you could write down as we're going along with the class. This way, if there's any questions that you have, you can, you won't forget them, and you'll be able to ask them, when I ask you for your reaction, your questions. So actually, what maybe we should do at this point is, before we take the next step in terms of what the readers wrote in the Jewish Times this week, why don't we open it up to you now, and let me just ask you just to keep your questions. Let's do some questions right now, if you have any, but keep them to the proof of Sinai being that it's based on that there was no ignorance, so therefore the story wasn't transmitted falsely that way, and there was no fabrication. All right, so up to what we presented up to this point, if you have any questions, now you could type them on screen, and I'll pause and wait for you to type them, see if there's any questions, but only on that topic. Only to take questions on that topic, because we have a number of points to go yet in the class. All right, so just please only do entries on screen right now that are questions regarding what we just did. I see Rosie, you're writing to other people. That's fine. But from this point right now, let's hold off on that just so I can see the questions and it doesn't confuse the screen. So only questions right now on what we wrote. Again, Rosie, just questions on the presented material right now. Fryam in Texas is asking, what is the earliest written text? on the account of Sinai. I guess the codex that they had, the Maimonides, I'm not sure it was Aleppo where, or in Egypt, where they had the Sefer Torah that they had compared all others to in order to make sure that it was proper. I'm not sure, though. I'm not sure the age of it. Okay, any other questions before we go further? Rosie, you're asking how many generations of Jews were enslaved prior to God freeing them? About 210 years. That's how many years they were in Egypt. Okay, Gabriel is asking, how is it that so many Jews reject the words of Devarim in regards to all the people having heard Hashem and fall into the trap of documentary hypothesis? Well, Gabriel, many people have, I mean, the one thing I was going to get to later, but I'll mention it now since you brought up the point. A person has emotions, and if a person wants to live a life where he's not obligated in Torah laws, he wants to be free. He wants to have his freedom uninhibited. He doesn't want it to be his freedom to be infringed on in any manner. He wants to be the cause of all his actions, travel when he wants, not have to keep the Sabbath. He wants to be able to eat whatever he wants. With these desires are so strong, a person will not pay attention to looking into proofs. He'll just live in ignorance. Like they say, ignorance is bliss. If a person does want honesty, they'll look into it, and they will see that it's something which you cannot disprove. But the reason why so many Jews reject Devarim is not because they have arguments, but because they are ignorant, and they just push it away without even investigating it. Kim in Florida is asking, what about the Palestinian narrative whereby many, so many called Palestinians believed they were residents of a land for generations when, in fact, many actually came during the first Aliyah waves? Yes, I mean, people can believe what they want. If a story is repeated over to people, they'll start believing it. I mean, you know, people believe that Jesus walked on water. And we'll get to that as well. How do we show that that is really not provable? But we're not saying that people won't believe things. That is not what I'm saying. People can believe and will believe things very, very strongly. The question is, do they have a proof, a rational proof? No, that they do not have. When you look into it, you'll see that there's no, they trace themselves back. They'll see that just like Arafat himself was not, he was not born in what they call Palestine. He was an Arab, and all the other people they came from, and they were kicked out of either Syria or wherever it was, and they were shipped around. If they look into the history, they'll see. And books have been written on this already. So the person who wants the proof based on historical fact, it's available. Neil in South Carolina, he's asking, are you aware that a mountain in Saudi Arabia, Jabal el-Lawz, is thought to be the real Mount Sinai? There's a book about it. Okay, that sounds interesting. Not familiar with that claim at all. Ephraim in Texas is asking, do you think that the text at Qumran supports the Torah, meaning the Sinai account? You'd have to tell me what the exact text is. Okay, but again, looks like nobody really has a question on the principles that we're talking. Right now we were talking about the principle of how do we know that something is passed down accurately? How do we know that any story in history, how can we prove a story in history is really being true? That's what I wanted to get discussed over here, but I don't see a lot of you discussing that. So let's try to keep the conversation based on that. There's a lot of questions I'm sure you all have. Tom Howe is asking, whereas the Torah is God's teaching and instructions to the Jews and the others that came out of Egypt, God also told us in four different places not to add or subtract to his Torah. Why don't believers trust his word and obey it out of fear of judgment? Again, the same answer to what I think Gabriel was saying, Tom, that I responded to Gabriel why there's so many people reject the Torah. People have emotional agendas. They don't want to feel the obligation. And that's why they're always fighting with proving Sinai. But you don't see people always... You never see people coming up with arguments. Hey, how do you really know that Caesar existed? How do you know that, you know, George Washington was the first president? Why don't people ever have arguments against those historical events? Because those historical events, whether you believe them or not, don't impose on you any type of obligation in changing your lifestyle to be observant and following all these commands. And people on the surface feel, I want freedom. But if they look into the ideas and see what a beneficial life they would have by following what their own creator said is better for them, then they might, you know, come around. But there's no proof, Tom. They're not following proof. They have no rational arguments. Ask them. You'll see. Okay, Brian, I see that Dead Sea Scrolls. Okay, again, in terms of what the context is, we'll have to take a look. Rosie is asking, literacy was rare in the early centuries, was it not? Nope, it was not. The Jews were very quite literate. The writers of the Bible were probably only a small cadre. Incorrect, Rosie. You have to do some research, and you'll see that what the rabbis in the Talmud, this is quite a bit written on it. And if you'll do the research, you'll find that you're writing something which is just your own assumption. Okay, and Robert in Seattle. Good to see you, Robert. Hope you're doing well. Okay, Neil in South Carolina. You should take a look at Mahler's book. You'll find it very interesting, and it proves the truth of the Torah. Around the mountain are the pillars Moses was told to construct. The remains of the altar is still there. The book is loaded with good information. All right, I tell you what, Neil, why don't you send an email to the Masorah site with information about that? I'd like to take a look at that. Okay, Ephraim, my pleasure. And Chazak, okay. All right, again, I don't see real questions on the points over here, so let's move on then. It looks like nobody has a real issue with the fact that we've proven that the Torah really has to be accurate and true. Okay. And we said again that since we can't show any ignorance, and also we have no motive that everybody would lie, so the story that has reached us today, it must have been a true event. Okay, so now let's take the arguments that people had. One writer wrote in, and he actually had a good statement. He said that, how is it that you can just look at the Torah and based on the Torah itself, prove it internally? You need something external to the Torah to prove the Torah. You're trying to prove the words of the Torah. So how do you, if I just open a book and I read a book, well, and I say, well, based on the words of this book, it's true. Well, you need some sort of a way to prove the book, because the book is the thing in question. So whenever you have an object that is in question, okay, so then you have to have some sort of an external proof to it. You can't prove the book from the book itself, because the book is the thing you're trying to prove. So this writer was saying that you can't prove the Torah from the Torah's words. You're right. And we never said that we are proving the Torah from the Torah's words. What we're proving the Torah from is the transmission that's been unbroken throughout all the generations. Okay, so we are referring to something external to the Torah itself. We are saying that based on the transmission that has been unbroken throughout all the generations, that's what confirms to us that these words had to be true. Because what would motivate the people to pass down this story? And the entire nation passed it down, and then we have it over 3,300 years later. We have this account, and it would be impossible that they would transmit it if it had not happened, because in the story itself, we just read it, Moses is telling them, don't forget what your eyes saw. So if these people pass it down, that means they agree with what Moses told them. That means they are not doubting that their eyes saw something. They agree. Our eyes saw the event. We saw a mountain. We saw it on fire. We heard words coming out of flames. All right? So therefore, we are using something external to the Torah itself. Okay. A few questions I see here. Tom Howe, have the Jewish race become less Torah observant? Is this one reason that they're being punished in the last 2,000 years? Well, we don't know what is punishment and what is not. Actually, I spoke with a rabbi recently and discussed this point, in the whole tsunami event, and he referred to Maimonides, who talks about that there's two things we could say are definitely punishments. One is a drought, an extended period where there's no rain, and another is when wild beasts come into the land and start hurting mankind. Other than that, we can't say whether something is God's will or it's just nature. We just don't have that information. So we can't talk about the Jews being punished on something unless it's like to the Jewish people themselves. See, this rabbi also mentioned that, for example, the Holocaust, that's happening to the whole Jewish nation. So that would be considered a punishment. There could be many reasons why, but unless we are And told what the reason is, we can't assume why God does it, but what he's punishing us for. Okay. And Susan is asking, did the letters of the Torah look exactly then as they look now? No, they actually changed. All right, the Gemara, the Talmud talks about that. Okay. Okay, so now we took up the argument from one writer, and his argument was that if you have a book, you can't prove the book from the book itself. Meaning if you want to prove something as having a certain status, you need to have something else is doing the proof. But I want you to keep in mind that if he would suggest that you need another book to prove the Torah, then he'd be in a problem. He'd be in a contradiction. So let me ask you, why would that? Let me put a question to you all now. Meaning, we're saying, and you know, again, the writer wrote in saying that you can't prove the Torah from the Torah itself. You need something to validate the Torah. True, I agree. And we said what we're using to validate the Torah is the very transmission that has been unbroken throughout all the generations. We would not have people passing down the story. So the actual element that is the validation of the Torah is the transmission of all the people throughout all the millennia. That itself is showing you that they attest to the story. Okay, whereas, for example, whereas if you had a case, like, for example, where they want to say, well, why don't you say that the story is about Jesus? He also, if you look in Matthew, and you look where it says that he took a loaf of bread and two fish, and he able to feed 5,000 men and women. Okay, so they have a story too. They have a story as well that there was a miracle that Jesus supposedly performed in front of masses of people, and 5,000 is a good number of people. Yet, we do not accept that story. So why is it that we reject the story of Jesus' miracles, but we don't reject the Sinai's miracles? And I want you to have this clear in your head, what I'm going to tell you. And that is the one difference. And that is all you need, is one refutation. And that is that the stories about Jesus were not written until about 100 years after, supposedly, he did them. Now, keep that in mind. They were not written. And these are even the Bible critics. And they basically say the stories were not written down until about 100 years later, right? 90 years later, whatever it was. Okay, Neil, you're looking for the email address. If you just look to the left hand of your screen at the bottom of all the white links, you will see an envelope icon. If you just click on that, that will send an email to the site. Okay, now, the point is that what's the difference between the stories that we have, where there are masses that watched miracles, and that we say for sure took place. So why don't we also say that the miracles that we have in the Christian Bible, that also for sure took place. But the answer is that they did not have their Bible written down until 100 years after the purported miracles, the so-called miracles, took place. Now, if there were actual miracles 100 years earlier and in front of 5,000 people, why is it that nobody passed it down to anybody else? Why is it that 5,000 people would be absolutely dead silent and not tell anybody else about some miracle of Jesus walking on the water or feeding 5,000 people with one loaf of bread and two fish, whatever it was? Now, the reason why there was mass silence, there could only be one reason, and that is that it didn't take place. You wouldn't have mass silence that's such a well-attended miracle. The fact that they wrote it down 100 years later, that doesn't make it true. I mean, look, you have a story too about Muhammad. So Islam actually started out as a religion based on astrology. They claimed that the sun and moon procreated, and they had the stars as children. There's some fantasy stories, and it was basically a moon god religion. And it's interesting. It just occurred to me why, you know, Islam itself, it has their flag, if you look, is a crescent moon and a star. Now you understand why that is the symbol of Islam, because they basically, you know, started out as a moon god religion. Now, they later on, if you read history, you'll find out that they cannibalized parts of Judaism. And actually, a historian wrote about this. And at a certain point, Muhammad adopted certain ideas that the Jews had. And then they even wrote in the Quran, they write that we are responsible for giving Moses to the Jews, and we are responsible for giving Jesus to the Christians. So you see that the approach that they took in order to try to get accepted as a religion is when they saw that there were two major religions at that time, the only way they felt that they would be able to gain a status on par with Judaism and Christianity would be, if you can't beat them, join them. That type of an approach. Meaning we have nothing to show our own greatness. So what are we going to do? We're going to say that we are responsible for these two religions. So you see itself as, I mean, you can see right through the story. But there were a lot of emotional attracting elements to the Quran, and also a lot of anger, and that definitely appealed to people. And they gained adherence, but they also gained the adherence through the jihad, the holy wars. So it was an oppressive method of getting people, either join us or we'll kill you. So you have it's a very good argument to join, and a lot of people did. But again, that is not a proof to the events taking place. So although you may have stories that are accepted by more people than the Jews, that does not mean that the story is true. Again, you have to be very clear when you study, and that's crucial. Because if you just look on the surface, you'll start making very ignorant comparisons between what Judaism has, what Christianity has, what Islam has. So what makes one better than the other? And yeah, we've heard these questions numerous times from people, but they're not asking based on intelligence. If they observed a little bit, they would realize that those stories were made up by individuals, and then they were either force-fed to people, or they were people coerced to follow them, or they wrote the stories down about events that they claim took place 100 years earlier, or 200 years earlier. Now, what are you going to do in a case like that? You either believe it or you won't. If the story is very appealing, so then you'll start growing adherence. And if you also build into your religion the concept of blind faith, and asking questions is no good, and that's the way it is even today in Christianity, so that's it. All the people that are going to be part of Christianity are people that are based on blind faith because they recognize they can't ask questions and they just have to accept it. If it feels good to their emotions, then they'll accept it. But that is not an argument that it's true. And we want to follow reason. We want to follow life based on proof. That's why we look for what are the elements that can prove a story and what are the elements that disprove a story. Okay. All right, so let's just take a look on screen. Let's see a couple of questions just came on. Okay, Susan, again, we want to just take questions on the topic right now, so I'm not going to take the question for now. Ellie in Baltimore is writing, but the Torah was also not written at once. That subject is a dispute of when it was written. Moshe gave it to them piecemeal or in entirety at the end of his life. Right, well, certainly, you're right, Ellie. I mean, Moses only gave the Jews at most up to the story of Yisro, which is this week's Parsha, at Sinai, because nothing else took place yet. So he can't give them the future. Moses was not giving the Jews the future. So you're right, it was given at certain points. The main concepts, though, were given over to them. They had the oral law. They had the Ten Commandments, so they saw that everything else was spelled out. But Moses was proved as being God's servant. And there was also another miracle that took place throughout Moses' life, and that was that his face glowed. His face was like lit up. It's a miracle. And people saw this. And God would not make a miracle for a person who was not following God. That's my understanding of why God did that miracle. Because from Moses, from that time that Moses was on Sinai for the rest of his life, his face was lit up. We don't think about him that way because we're not looking at the Torah accurately. But if we look at the Torah, it says it openly. And the reason why God did this, I believe, is in order that there should be a continuous representation that Moses is in line with God and he's not speaking anything of his own accord. Because if he would make up things, why would God condone him? Why would God lend a miracle to him? Hannah in Florida is asking, well, the Torah wasn't written down at first. It was passed down orally for a very long time, wasn't it? No, it was both. There was written and oral law, Hannah. Okay, Susan in New York. I thought each letter of the Torah was supposed to be passed down exactly since it was handed down. When did that change? No, it was passed down exactly. When they changed the alphabet, that's not changing the words. So it doesn't have to keep the exact same characters. But the actual words and the letters, they were all the same letters. It was just a different alphabet, Susan. Benny is asking, tell me again how long after Sinai event until it appeared in written form? I think you got cut off, Benny. Just re-enter that, Benny. Susan. In other words, when did the original Torah as we know it get created? That was in the year 2448, Susan. All right, right now we're in 5765. That was 3,313 years ago or so. Okay, Neil in South Carolina. The Bible critics to whom you refer, who claim the New Testament wasn't written for 100 years after the events took place, are incorrect. They're basing their belief on the Greek New Testament, but they were written in real time in Aramaic, and that information is coming out right now. There's a lot more in this. You can verify it easily. All right, Neil, again, there's an email link. I'd like to see that information. You look at the email icon at the left of your screen underneath the white links. Just send an email out with a link or something on that. Dennis in Wisconsin, is the Christian God and the Jewish God the same? No, because their concept of God is this being that becomes a man inside of a woman. That is not the concept we have of God. Susan in New York, if there are some brilliant Christians, why can't they see how false the religion is? Well, the brilliant Christians abandoned Christianity. I know plenty of people who were brought up Christian and realized it was false, and they left. Some of them actually became Jewish, and some of them, are just keeping the seven Noahide laws is what they're supposed to do. Benny is saying that's a good question. Tell me again how long of a Sinai event until it. It's not a complete sentence, Benny. I don't know what you're asking. Robbie is asking, if Hashem could free us from Egypt and gather us all together at Sinai to give us his eternal Torah, how can one believe that some 1,500 years later he changed his mind and only told one guy, Jesus? We were all there in Israel. Why not get us all together again, this time at the temple, and give us his New Testament? Good argument. That's a very good argument. Robbie is asking as follows. If God can make a mass event at Sinai as an indisputable proof, so why didn't they do the same thing for Jesus? That's a good argument against the stories that they purport about Jesus. Okay. That's a good point, Robbie. Thank you for that point. All right, so again, it's important to keep in mind that their stories were written down much later, and but the Torah was not. It was not. It was written down as time went along, and the people transmitted it to their children and to their children, so we have an unbroken chain about the event, just like all other history that we know is true. Okay, but you have to keep in mind that. Whenever people say, well, if you can make up a story about an event that took place thousands of years ago, and people either believe you or they won't. So that is not something which we say is any proof. We always look, where are the people that were at the event and passed it down, and let us see in a direct lineage, let's see the names of people, and even what, Neil, what you were saying, that they're trying to come out now and say that the story was written in real time in Aramaic and so on and so forth. Let's see where it says who the people were, what tribes they were from, who these 5,000 people were that he gave the fish and the bread, and he was able to feed the numerous people with only one piece of fish or two pieces of fish and one piece of bread. But if you look at the story in the Torah, you know the exact tribes. You have their names. You know exactly where they traveled. You know the numbers. You know the years. It counts the years. How long it was after they left Egypt. So you have a very clear picture as to what took place. In terms of the other religions, you do not have that. You have stories, you have myths. The accounts are something which are based on blind faith, because why do they have to build their religion on blind faith if they had a real proof? And again, you don't have an account of who these 5,000 people were, and where did they go? Where did they come from? What were their names? And how come there was no stir at the time? Why did they tell others? I mean, if this was true, and thousands of people, they would come and say, no, Jesus did these things, and so on and so forth. I mean, the Jews would not deny miracles. They have seen them in the past, and they accepted them. So you're not going to deny what you if masses tell you is true. Okay. Susan in New York is asking, so you are assuming that any religious person other than Jewish could not possibly be brilliant. What about the Harvard Christian theologians? No, a person could be brilliant in many areas of life, but he can be completely ignorant in the area of his religion. And this is a truth in many people. I've heard many brilliant people that are great in politics. When it comes to religion, They just throw up their hands in blind faith. It seems to be that they are raised with this concept from youth, and they haven't stopped to think, hey, maybe I should analyze religion also. That has not occurred to these people. There are plenty of people that are the richest businessmen in the world, yet when they open up the newspaper, they go right to the horoscopes. Why? Because there's a part of their psyche which has been left unexamined. And they have that little safe haven where, oh, let's see what the horoscopes, there's some powers out there. They can't explain it. And in every other area of their life, they will analyze things to death, and they'll become so rich because they're so sharp in business. But they will not use that same analysis on religion. So that takes place. I'm not denying the fact that you have people that are brilliant, but when it comes to religion, they are backwards. Susan in New York is asking, does Hashem want there to be other religions? No, of course not. That's what we read in Deuteronomy 4:6. Moses tells the people that other nations will look at you and they will say, what a wise and understanding nation this great nation is. Meaning other nations will look at the Jews as having a supreme system. But that will only happen if the Jews live properly and we exhibit the ideas properly and we engage in discussion with people that are not Jewish in order to teach them. Because God did not create Jew and non-Jew. God created Adam and Eve. And he wanted them to have offspring and that the rest of the world would follow a correct lifestyle based on intelligence. It wasn't until about 2,500 years later, the year 2448, that God gave a Torah. And a lot of the Torah is to combat the false idolatrous notions that cropped up throughout those first 2,500 years of mankind. So he gave a system to the Jews because their forefather Abraham was monotheistic and he examined with his mind and he was a great role model. And he was able to use his mind to extricate himself from idolatry. And he was a great example of that. The human mind has the ability to uncover truth. Even if you're raised in an idolatrous culture like Abraham was, but he himself was able to use his mind and analyze the world and realize that these ideas of idolatry are false. And then he studied for many decades until he finally came up with a clear idea of the creator of the universe. And he taught many people. And that he realizes God's plan. And because he was living out God's plan, all based on his own knowledge, he did not do any of this with God's help. So he reached a certain point of greatness at 40 years old on his own. Because of this, God wanted him and selected him to be the leader of a nation that would follow in his footsteps. And that's exactly what the Torah says. Because he says that, I know that you will teach his household after him in his ways to do charity and righteousness in the land. Okay. Ephraim in Texas is asking, was an elder in the Christian church and I converted after studying the Torah? Not everyone is intelligent as they seem. I think I know what you mean. Okay, Neil in South Carolina. Do you know why the Birkat Aminim was altered in the first century? Birkat Aminim, I think you mean to say in the Shemona Esrei. But let's not take up side points now. We're getting off the track. All right, I'm not sure what you're referring to anyway. I think you mean about the Shemona Esrei. Let's stick to the topic. Okay, Ephraim. Okay, that's what somebody else. Robbie is saying, I heard many people say that they believe Sinai never happened, but I've never heard of one alternative account of the event, which one might expect to find with millions of people witnessing the event. Very good argument. Okay, Robbie, it's a very good point again. Robbie is saying that he heard a lot of people that deny Sinai, but he never heard of them offering an alternative account of, well, what did happen to the Jews during that era? If they weren't at Sinai, so what did happen? Well, where is the true history of the Jews? Did it just magically vanish? See, that's a very good point that Robbie is making. If you want to try to argue that the history of the Jews in Egypt, and there was no plagues, and they never went to Sinai, but we see the Jews today in the world, so where did they come from? Where is the accurate history? It would be impossible to obscure the true history of the Jews and replace it with a complete fabrication. Nobody would pass it down. So that itself is a very good argument, Robbie. I hope everybody sees that argument. It's very good. Okay, Chana in Florida. What are non-Jews supposed to do in regards to religion? Convert to Judaism or just follow the Noahide laws? Chana, they are supposed to follow the Noahide laws. If they're moved to study more, to practice more, they're allowed to, a Gentile is allowed to keep more mitzvahs than just the seven. The only thing he cannot keep is Shabbos and the holidays. Other than that, he can keep the whole Torah. And if he wants, at a certain point, he wants to convert, then he can convert as well. But then all those laws would be obligatory on him. For now, the Gentile is just supposed to keep the seven Noahide laws. Okay. Jack is saying, our tradition teaches that all nations rejected some aspect of the Torah, so why would they accept it now? Well, a person has free will. So what people rejected in the past has no reflection on what new people today would accept. But it's clear, God only gave one system. And that's why Moses said to the people in Deuteronomy 4, 6, the other nations of the world will say, Rak am navim v'chacham ha-goy ha-gadol hazeh. Really, this nation is wise and understanding. This great nation. Meaning when they look at the Jews and they see the commands, this is going to be the response. This is what Moses, the greatest prophet, if Moses is saying this, he has to be basing it on a rational principle. And that rational principle is that Moses recognizes that this system itself is something which just bears out such brilliance that the other nations will be able to see the brilliance. And they will not look at their own religion as being anything on par with it. They'll realize this is the only event. And like Robbie said earlier, he typed on screen earlier, that this is something which, it was a one-time event. Even God says that. Kol gadol v'lo yasaf. The Torah says it was a great voice, and it did not continue. Meaning God made this event at Sinai once because that is sufficient. It is sufficient to have the event once because it is a proof that will last through all generations. And it's a system for the entire mankind. But he gave the obligatory aspects of the Torah to the Jews. And those are the 613 commands that we have. And the seven commands, well, those were part of mankind's obligations. And after Noah, there were seven commands that existed for everybody. So that existed even before the Torah was given. But that didn't change. Okay. And we have a few more questions. Okay, Susan in New York is writing, the truth is that Christians believe in Sinai, they just believe that the laws have changed with Jesus. Right, but they base it on fallacy. God said he'll never change the law. In the Torah itself it says you cannot add and you cannot subtract. So Christianity goes against God's own words. They have no way out of that argument. Benny in Arkansas is saying, a thesis that applies to the Jewish religion, saying that since it does not apply to other religions, the other religions must be false. No. The point we're saying is that there was only a religion given once, and all the other religions are based on hearsay. They're based on the lies of individuals and made-up events, and they may have very strong emotions why they wanted to deify Jesus, and they may have had very strong emotions why they wanted to believe that Muhammad went up in a chariot or on a horse or whatever it was, into the heavens, but you don't have masses that attested to these things in an unbroken chain. So therefore, we don't say there's any proof to those religions. That's all we're saying. Okay? But I guess what you're saying, you could say that, yes, we're saying that there's a certain thesis, there's a certain truth that applies to Judaism, and it doesn't apply to the other religions. So the other religions don't pass muster. That's what we're saying, Benny. That the other religions don't have anything to prove that their history is true. Anytime you want to prove history, there's a system to prove history. I don't care if it's religious history or political history or whatever. History has a certain way you can prove it. And if you don't have those factors in the story, then there's no proof that it took place. Just because many people follow something does not mean that it took place. It just means they believed in a written story. You can have people believing. All right, Dennis, we're saying that Sinai, the event, revelation at Sinai, took place in the year 2448. Lila in Chicago is asking, it is written in the Torah that there will be no changes to the laws and that any prophets performing miracles that try to change the law, they are false and not to be believed. Correct. Correct, Lila. All right, anybody who tries to change the system is going against God's words. That's clear. Jim in South Carolina, when did the oral law become the written Torah? That became many years later. I don't have the exact date, but that was because they saw that it was to be lost if they didn't write it down. But the Torah allows you to write it down. The Torah actually had a principle that says that when you're allowed to temporarily suspend a Torah law if it's for the sake of the Torah. So that's why they were able to temporarily suspend the prohibition of writing it down, and they wrote it down that one time. Susan in New York, how can the early Jewish Christians not have known that the Messiah couldn't change the laws? They break laws. They don't follow God's word. It's very simple. God said that he's one in Deuteronomy, and the Christians say he's three. So you can do what you want. People have free will, and they follow their emotions. They're not following rational principles, Susan. That's why they're doing it. So you shouldn't be amazed that people will believe in things that are false. If, as long as a person wants to follow his emotions, he can believe anything he wants. Okay. Susan is saying, again, why would the early Christians believe that Jesus was Messiah if they knew it was wrong to change the laws? Again, the same answer. Neil in South Carolina. Some of the evidence you asked for is found in the changes made to the Birkat Minim. Okay, separate point, Neil. Again, I don't want to get off the topic. Okay. Amos in South Carolina is writing, it is important to remember that the term Christian now refers to wide spectrum of beliefs. It is difficult and unfair to lump them all together. Okay, good critique. I accept that critique. I accept your critique, Amos. Neil in South Carolina. Okay, you're writing to Susan. And, okay, it looks like those are the questions. All right. Now, I want you to keep in mind also that the reason why a lot of people have this problem with accepting Sinai as proof is, number one, people are raised to feel that religion is something based on belief, and faith is stronger. That is a Christian idea. You have to realize that's part of the side effects of being in a nation that is predominantly Christian. A lot of their values wear off on us if we are not careful to look at them clearly and to be honest with ourselves and to study Judaism to see what Judaism really says. And even when a lot of Jews get up and start saying things, I mean, I've heard so-called religious Jews get up and get on TV and say the most stupid things. People believing, there was a debate on TV a few months ago, and one rabbi was saying that the red string on the wrist protects you from the evil eye, and the other rabbi was rightly breaking him down and showing him that it's like snake oil, it's just voodoo. And Judaism does not believe in voodoo. Judaism does not believe in any power except for God. But you see that this other guy who calls himself a rabbi, he runs this Kabbalah center in New York, and he's going around misleading so many people. I just spoke to a woman last week who attended the classes there and realized that they're like a cult. And they don't teach Judaism, but they're just trying to be pluralistic and get a lot of adherents. And he's probably just into money. And that's usually what is behind all this, his own self-gratification, his own fame. And he's not honestly searching to see if the Torah speaks against it, which it does. And you will see many people that either present themselves as rabbis or are rabbis. That should not be an argument for whether their ideas are true or false. If you hear a person say something which is ridiculous, the idea is ridiculous. That's it. And, you know, this concept about faith, well, you have to ask yourself a question. Is that part of Judaism or no? Well, we see that all the great rabbis, at Maimonides and Sforno the Kuzari, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, you see that they base Judaism. It's all on rational principles. All right? It's all based on clear, rational proofs. That's why God gave us intelligence, that we should be using it in the most important area of our lives. And when a person doesn't use it, just wants to follow what the rest of the world says because you feel insecure, you feel that, well, everybody else says it, there's got to be something to it. Well, that's not thinking. That is not clear thinking. Just because everybody else does something is not an argument to do it. All right? You have to look at what the Torah says, study it. You have to take the time to study. There's only one way for you to arrive at truth, and that's through using your mind and researching it yourself. But if you don't want to do that and you want to be lazy, so then you'll be left to what the ignorant masses follow, and it'll be unfortunate. Okay, let's look on screen and see what we have. Neil in South Carolina saying, God is one, Echad. Adam and Eve became one, Echad, when they became man and wife. I don't see a correlation over there. I don't know what you're writing it for exactly. Gabriel in L.A. Okay. Okay, that's to Susan, all right? Okay, Susan, you're writing, it's just so hard to believe that so many people can misinterpret the Torah or the signs of Moshiach. Well, it shouldn't be hard to believe that people can remain ignorant, Susan. People are ignorant, and people who do not study and look to what is truth will remain ignorant. How many people thought that the world was flat? What was that based on? Was there any research? But the entire world at that time thought the world was flat. But it wasn't based on any type of principle. They just followed the leader. People are very insecure, Susan. You have to realize that. That's why people are afraid to make waves, and they're afraid to ask. And they don't want to be different. And those that need for a self-image that people have is what fosters the grand, scheme of things, where we see so many people following religions that are completely ridiculous. But they follow it because other people follow it, and they don't want to be left out, and they don't want to be ridiculed, and they want to be loved, and they want to be accepted. So people are following the emotion of needing acceptance, meaning it all goes back to ego. That's the primary emotion that people are functioning on, is to have a good self-image. And the way they arrive at a self-image is by getting them as many people as possible to approve of them. How do I get people to approve of me? I do what they do. Oh, now they applaud for me. Now I feel good about myself. But that's not your goal here in life. Your goal here is not to get approval from people who themselves are the blind, following the blind. Our goal here is to use our intelligence to realize what is true about reality and the world and how we should live our life, and what is false. And that has to be what remains as our focal point. Gabriel is asking why I spell Jesus with a dash. No, you could spell out Jesus. The only thing you're not supposed to do, Gabriel, actually, Chazak in Canada is writing this. I'm sorry. You can't say Jesus and then say Christ with, just saying Jesus and then saying again, just saying Christ right afterwards, because then you're saying Jesus is God. That you're not allowed to say. Okay, Susan is writing, the Jews should start a missionary movement to spread the truth. Why can't we? I know we're not supposed to become missionaries. No, we're not. We're not trying to convert people to Judaism. We should make the ideas available. And if people are interested, that's what you should do. You definitely should help. You should learn together. You should have groups of learning. And you should definitely invite people that are not Jewish to understand what the main principles are that they should know. I mean, that's for sure. You should definitely be involved in teaching other people, not just Jews. But you have to know what they are yourself first. So educate the Jews, make sure they understand them, but teach them that we're supposed to be educators for the rest of the world. Okay. Rachel in Florida is writing. Oh, you're writing it to Susan. You're saying it's not so hard to believe that people can believe fallacy. I was raised as a Christian and didn't even know there was a Torah of truth, or even that there was a Jewish religion, until I moved into a major city as a young adult. That's true, Rachel. Right. I mean, a lot of places, the information is just not even out there. Robbie is writing, it's much easier to believe in a religion where salvation comes simply by accepting a dogma, Christianity, right, rather than a religion that makes demands upon their behavior and acceptance of law. That's right, Robbie. Again, very good point, that it's easy for a person just to believe that I have salvation and I just got to say three Hail Marys and that's it. I now am forgiven. It's a guilt-free religion that satisfies base emotions. So you have to realize that there's so much that goes into why people believe religions. Most people are not really exerting their minds in life. Our culture and the major countries are all promoting with their advertising and the hedonistic lifestyle and fancy cars and the monetary lifestyle and being successful, being famous, being rich. This is what the world looks up to today, the movie stars and money. They're looking up to basically movie stars as ego. You want to identify with them because you wish they were really you. You wish you were the movie star with all that fame. That's ego. And then having all that money, oh, you could have every single pleasure and travel every single place you wanted to. Truth is, you'd probably be bored after a few months of doing that. You'd be tired as hell, so you wouldn't even know what to do with all the money. And you see that caters to hedonism. But that's what most people are following. They're following their instincts. The instincts have a head start in life. So unless a person uses his intelligence, he's not going to try to extricate himself from a life of hedonism. He's just going to follow the instincts that he had from youth. But the goal for us is really not to do that, but to examine our ways and to try to mature intellectually and follow what is truth, not just follow what feels good from youth. Okay, Neil, you're saying, I hope you're not going to let my comment just hang there. Okay, let me see your comment. Oh, okay. You're saying, I'm responding to your comment about Christians. believing in three gods. They don't. They believe in one God who manifests himself in three ways. Well, I don't understand what that means. He manifests himself in three ways. I mean, they're still saying that there's him, there's a Holy Ghost, and there's this. That's not what God said. They're basically saying something which God didn't say. So that's something which is ridiculous. I mean, the concept of being manifested as a mortal in the form of Jesus and having a mother that didn't immaculate conception, that's against reality. Okay. Alrighty. Looks like those are the questions. All right, so again, so it should be clear to everybody that what we are using as proof is something which is not subject to the story being passed down through ignorance, because it's simple phenomena, and not through fabrication, because you had masses, and masses removes any type of mass conspiracy. Mass conspiracy just is not a human possibility, because to conspire means you have a motive to lie, and you will not have masses that will share a common motive. Okay. And then again, we're saying that we're not just using the book itself, but as a proof. We're not just reading the Torah and saying, well, since it says it, it's true. The proof is that we had this transmission that was not broken. And it was passed down through the ages. And this would not have been passed down if the people didn't believe it themselves. I mean, this should be clear to everybody. The Jews are not going to pass down a story that says, I believe I was there and I saw something, if I really didn't see it. Moses would not be successful in getting masses of people to believe that they saw something that they didn't. Nobody can do that. The only way the story would be passed down is if it did take place. Again, we see that even the other religions accepted that as true, that Judaism has a proof of history in it. And that's why it was not denied. And it never will be. You have a few individuals that will question it, but again, keep in mind, why are they questioning it? Do they have a refutation, or do they just want to remain ignorant? I was emailing with somebody earlier this morning, and he writes in, and he has this attitude, and I'm saying, listen, would you accept the proof if I gave you 100% proof that Sinai took place? It was a yes or no question, and he writes back this long thing, and I said, listen, I see from you cannot answer the questions, you don't want to answer the question. You don't want to admit that you would reject a proof, because this person is not looking for truth. He's just looking to dismiss it because he doesn't want to have this obligation on himself. And that's an infantile and a very naive approach, because if just like you'd listen to every single word a doctor would tell you about having the best life physically, you'd listen to every single word that God tells you about having the best life spiritually if you realized that this is going, you only have one chance here and you want to have the best for your life. But people think they're going to live forever. There's a lot of different emotions that are underneath that are causing a person not to want to look into it. I feel I'm going to live here forever, so there's no real responsibility. There's no such thing as reward and punishment. You get these people to face the truth about this, I guarantee you a lot of them will start coming around. Okay. All right, so I think that really wraps up what I wanted to present. I just wanted to show you how, you know, just a couple of the arguments that we've been getting and how we responded to them, and how we're saying it's not the book itself that is the proof, but it's the transmission that is something which is validating the Torah, validating the book. And the Torah system is, according to the Torah itself, it's for the whole nation, the whole world. The Jews have 613 and the Gentiles have 7. Again, the Gentiles can keep more than 7. They can keep everything excluding Shabbos and holiday observance if they'd like, and they would benefit from those laws as well. Again, man is man. God didn't create two types of people. There's no such thing as a Jewish soul and a Gentile soul. No. God created human beings. Gentiles come from Adam, and so do Jews come from Adam. So we're both coming from the same original person. See, we're not different. All right? And in the future, the Jew Dobbins 3 times a day in the Aleinu prayer, we say the Chobani Basar Yikr Shemecha, all men of flesh, meaning all human beings will eventually recognize God. That is the goal. All right, all religions are deviations from what God wanted. God didn't make other religions. Somebody asked earlier, does God want the other religions? Of course not, because the other religions are false. All right. Okay, Robbie, thank you. But looks like Neil disagrees with you. I don't know what the point is that he said. Mashiach is not God. Nowhere in Torah does it say that. Okay, well, we'll see what Neil writes about that. Amos in South Carolina, I'm not sure who you're writing to, but let's see what you're writing. Many Christians do not say Hail Marys and do not emphasize clean living in Bible study. It appears that there are also many Christians in this day who are realizing the fact that God's plan begins and ends with Jews. Jesus said this himself in the New Testament. Christianity has just ignored it until now. Things are changing. Well, as long as the Christians follow Christianity and they don't follow the seven Noahide laws, they're still following a corrupt religion. Okay, Susan, I'm glad you enjoyed the class. I mean, we have plenty of other audio files that are online from previous classes on the audio files link. You'll see that on the left-hand side. Okay, Chazak is saying that Christians worship on Sunday. They should worship on the Shabbos if they are realizing their error. Okay. Well, they should change their worship completely. It would really be what you mean to say, Chazak. All right, but keep in mind too the fact that the stories are the other religions were, if you'll read the research on it. I think it was 2 weeks ago in the Jewish Times. If you want to go to our Jewish Times link, you can download last week's Jewish Times, which I believe was issue 146, and that dealt with the other religions. So if you look for issue 146 on our link on the left-hand side of the page, it says Jewish Times. I think of the sixth link down. You go to the Jewish Times, you can download issue 146, and you'll see the research that we provide you with regarding the other religions, how they started, and what the principles are. And you'll start getting an understanding as to, even though many people follow them, and even though they're very ancient and they have these great, beautiful temples, don't be misled by all these external trappings and feel that, well, they look like a religion, they smell like a religion, therefore they must be a religion. That is a false idea, but that is something which unconsciously many of us respect. And we do not stop and look at it objectively. And a lot of us just don't have the courage to say these people are wrong. I mean, that is a problem, but that is something which you have to realize is not an argument. You cannot say because so many people are doing something that plays any role in terms of the validity or the veracity of their claims. All right? The truth of their principles is not proven because many people say it. I don't care how many people say 2 + 2 = 5. You could have the entire universe saying it. It will not be true. And you have to work on your emotions too, that you should not feel humbled and subjugated to adopting what everybody else believes. Again, that's just coming from your own need for acceptance. You have to look into yourself. That's part of growth, is that we look at the emotions that are at play in ourself, and we stop and we pause and we reflect. I mean, this is something which we must do on a regular basis, regardless of discussions like Sinai and so on. The point is that, self-reflection and repentance and doing tshuva is something which is very important, because working on our own emotional makeup is half the game. We have to learn. We have to, on a daily basis, we should learn new ideas about the Torah system, and to delve into it and to really appreciate the wisdom that is there. But what we also have to do is apply to ourself where we see that we have certain emotional errors that we're making, and we have certain attachments and certain leanings, and we have to stop and say, is this proper? Is this a proper thing? I mean, even Abraham had to be told by God to leave his father's house. This was not something he would have done on his own. That's why God had to step in. So God had to try to help him. But we learn from stories like that how to apply it to ourselves too. So you have to realize that more than meets the eye when we're looking at these other religions, and there's a lot of people following them. It's not only that they're false, but there's also these emotions that many people have that it satisfies. But that is not an argument that makes the religion true. Okay. Okay, Mordechai in Pennsylvania writes, in words of our age, you can't fool all the people all the time. Thus, when huge numbers of Jews witnessed what they witnessed, And then when these Jews and their children and grandchildren accept the Torah text, this is a powerful proof. Yes, it's an absolute proof. Lazar, next class we'll post. Next class will be Wednesday at 1:30, but you could frequent, because sometimes the schedule changes. For now, the next class will be Wednesday. We may do one earlier. So if we do a class, we'll always send out an email like we sent out today. Okay, and the Chazak is writing that religious doctrines limit our knowledge of God. We should free ourselves from it and stick to the Torah. Yes. I mean, God put everything that was necessary for the right path. He put it into the Torah. So everything that's necessary is there. Okay, any other questions? Susan, no, we don't do classes at night because we want to make it available to people in Israel as well. And if we do it at night, then they can't access the class. It'll be too late for them. It'll be in the middle of the morning, like 3 in the morning if we do it at night. But again, the classes are recorded and they're posted online, so you can listen to them whenever it's convenient for you. So if you can't attend live, you'll be able to listen to any of the classes that we do by just clicking on them. And that, again, is in the audio files. Okay, any other questions on today's topic? Okay, again, Elazar, we did not post yet what we're going to do the class on yet. But once we decide what the topic will be, we'll post it on the live classes link. And you'll be able to see it there. Okay, it looks like that's it in terms of the questions. So if there's none other, we'll wrap it up. It's 5 o'clock now, New York time. And again, we will put the class online. So within the half an hour, if you came to the class late today, and you like to hear it from the beginning, in approximately a half an hour, you can go to the audio files link, and this class will be posted there, and it will be entitled Proving Sinai. Okay, Chazak, my pleasure. Mordechai in Pennsylvania, my pleasure. Okay, Gabriel is saying, it doesn't take more than one generation to disprove a lie. If the whole community is saying the same thing. I'm not sure what you're getting at, Gabriel. Okay, Nancy, my pleasure. Neil in South Carolina. Jean, nice to see you again, Jean. Susan in New York. I'm glad you're able to join, Susan, your first class. Again, this, explore the website. There are plenty of articles, too. And all the articles are searchable. There's a search link on the left-hand side, about halfway down, and you have to search, or you can just go straight to the philosophy link, which is the third link from the top. You could look at the article titles, or you could search them by keywords. All right. It looks like that'll be it for today. So we'll see you next time. Stay posted. And again, if you're not subscribed, you can receive the schedule on the bottom of your screen. It says receive schedule. Click here. So that'll send an email to the system. It'll automatically subscribe you to the emails. And this way you'll receive notices of whenever the next classes are. Okay, Benny, I'm glad you enjoyed the class. I hope to see you again. And again, if there's any questions that you have during the week, you could always send an email to the website. We have a link that's three links from the bottom. It says contacts. You can write me directly. My name is Rabbi Moshe Menachem. Feel free to write the questions in. We try to address them all in a timely manner. And you know, the goal should be that you know, we're being honest about our Torah study and you know, continuing in terms of asking questions and not stopping with our questions until we see something very clear. Okay, Gabriel in L.A., you're writing, I'm saying that the first generation of Jews after Sinai would have been able to deny Sinai if, in fact, their parents hadn't experienced it. Oh, I see what you're saying. Good. Right. The first Jews would have denied it, and that would have cut off the story when Nev would have reached us today. That's right. But if the story didn't take place, Gabriel, you can go back one step. if the story in fact didn't take place, so then the parents themselves would not have passed it on to the children, and they would have just ignored, or they would have just run Moses out of town because they would have looked at him like a lunatic trying to get to convince a whole group of people that they saw something that they didn't. Okay, my pleasure. Rivka in New York. All right, then. So let me wish everybody a good day. Hope everybody in the Upper East of the U.S. is enjoying the nice scenery we have with this nice new white canvas that we have in front of us on the ground. And we'll see everybody next time. Have a good night to everybody. And again, the class will be online shortly if you missed anything. Okay. Have a good night to everybody.